Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Simcha, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, Shifra Bat Sara, and Dennis Shore, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Seb Ben Chava, Haram Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We're going to discuss a very important subject that we have discussed many times over the years, but we're going to really do it in detail on this week's program. And that's the subject of self-hating Jews in American politics and in politics in general, and why we oppose the self-hating Jewish politicians that run for office outside of Israel. We're against Jews running for office outside of Israel. We're going to explain that. And it's especially relevant now because in next year's presidential campaign, which really has already started, but in next year's presidential campaign, we see at least two very prominent self-hating Jews now running for president, the former mayor of New York City, Mike Bloomberg, and Bernie Sanders, both of whom would be an absolute catastrophe if they, God forbid, were elected to the presidency. Chas v'chalila, God forbid, that either Mike Bloomberg or Bernie Sanders would ever get elected. But Bloomberg now has indicated that he is planning to run. He's already filed papers in Alabama. He's planning to file papers in Arkansas because those are the first states with deadlines where you have to file. So it appears that he is planning to run unless he changes his mind again. And he would be a real disaster. First, let's start off by explaining our principle. We are against Jews holding office outside of Israel. Jews are not supposed to live outside of Israel. We have a Jewish homeland, Eretz Yisrael, that was given to us by Hashem. This week's parasha, Parashat Lech Lecha, that we just read, is a parasha, is a part of the Torah, where Hashem, God, commands Avraham Avinu to go to Eretz Yisrael and says he's going to give this land. He makes a covenant with Avraham Avinu, an eternal covenant, to give the land of Israel to the Jewish people forever. And Avraham Avinu doesn't even know where he's going when he's given this commandment. He's 75 years old. He spent a lifetime, or at least he spent several decades, preaching to people and urging people to believe in one God, and he convinced thousands of people to do it, and he had thousands of followers. And all of a sudden, Hashem, God, tells him, you got to pick up now and leave. After all the work you've done, after what you built up, you were convincing thousands of people, you got to leave, because the place, the only place where you can really successfully show the world that there's only one God is in Eretz Yisrael. When the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, that is the place where we can show the world that there's only one God. That's the place where Jews must be. And Avraham was the world's first Jew. And so he's commanded to go there. He's commanded to give up all of his work that he was doing. I mean, this is the ultimate, this parasha is the ultimate example of why Chabad is wrong. When they open up Chabad houses in Thailand and Iceland and all over the world, they were so happy to open a Chabad house in Iceland. No, if all of the Chabad Jews, if all of Lubavitch Jews made Aliyah and went to Israel, that would be much better for the Jews everywhere. In Eretz Yisrael, you do much more good. Yes, they can bring a Jew back here and there. They save some Jews, although overwhelmingly they're losing the battle. Over 90% of American Jews don't even want to be Jewish, don't even know, and they're self-hating. And 90% of American Jews are for all intents and purposes, not really even Jewish. And most of them are anti-Semites. Most of them are against Israel. They're so self-hating. They always bend over backwards to try to prove to the Gentiles that they're not loyal to Israel. That's the overwhelming majority of American Jews. The overwhelming majority of American Jews are lost. And Chabad and all these other outreach programs and people make excuses for staying in the Galut, in the exile, are wrong. There is no reason to stay in the Galut. God forbid. No reason to stay in the Galut. And the what Chabad and all these other groups would gain if they were in Israel, the difference they could make, tremendous difference they could make. In any event, now I got myself into trouble with the Chabad people, some of whom like this program, so I've got myself into trouble with them. But look, the truth has to be told. We were given a Jewish state and a Jewish homeland to live there. We were required to live there. Okay, when the Rebbe said that no Jew should ever leave Crown Heights, he told the Jews in Crown Heights, you're not allowed to leave Crown Heights. But never said that about Israel. I see all these Chabad Hasidim coming here, all these young Jews from Israel coming from Israel to the United States to put tefillin on Jews in the United States. They could do 10 times as much good if they were doing this in Israel, if they were all in Israel doing this in Israel. They can never have enough Jews doing this type of work in Israel. And to stay in Crown Heights with all the black anti-Semites and all the murder and rape and all the other terrible things that are happening there, to be surrounded by people who hate you and live in a community like that, instead of living in Eretz Yisrael at a time when for over 70 years God has given us, has returned us to our Jewish homeland, has fulfilled all the biblical prophecy. And people are living in Crown Heights? And I don't mean to pick on Chabad. I love Chabad. I love Chabad. I love the Rebbe. But, you know, we have a Jewish homeland. And you don't go to the Ukraine to pray at the grave of a Talmid Chacham, yes. But you don't go there. And that's not Chabad, that's another Hasidic group. But you don't go to the Ukraine to pray at his grave and give the Ukrainian Nazis who murdered hundreds of thousands of Jewish men, women, and children, give them huge amounts of tourist dollars. It's a major part of the Ukrainian economy that all of these Jews run to the Ukraine once a year to pray at the grave of a Rebbe. Instead of staying in Eretz Yisrael, and many of these Jews who go there then go with Ukrainian prostitutes and do other terrible things while they're there. It's just unbelievable. In any event, I just got myself into a lot of trouble now with a lot of people, but all right. Those who understand will understand. Mike Bloomberg is planning to run for president. And we're going to give you some examples of how the Jews that hold office outside of Israel, as much as Jews are not supposed to live outside of Israel, they're not even allowed to live outside of Israel when we have a Jewish state. The mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is equal to all the other mitzvot, it says. He who lives outside of Israel, it is as if he has no God, it says in the Talmud. If you live outside, in the Gemara, if you live outside of Israel, it's as though you have no God. And he who lives in the land of Israel, it's as if he does have a God. Now, if Jews are not supposed to live outside of Israel, how much more so is it a sin when Jews run for political office outside of Israel? That's really showing that they live in America and England and all these other countries, and they have no intention of going to Israel ever. They're part of the political system, political process of these other countries outside of Israel, where they have no business being a part of the political process. They have no business being leaders and politicians in these other countries. And so Jews should not run for office outside of Israel. And just to give you an illustration of how much harm Jews in high places, in high positions do when they're outside of Israel, look at Henry Kissinger. Yimach shmo v'zichro shem reshayim yirkav. May the name of the wicked be obliterated. May the name of the may his memory be obliterated, and the name of the and may the name of the wicked rot. Shem reshayim yirkav. May the name of the wicked rot. In the Yom Kippur War in 1973, before the war started, Israel knew that Egypt and Syria were planning a sneak attack on the Jewish state. And they were going to, they could have struck first like they did in 1967. They could have done a preemptive strike and the war would have been completely different. Israel would have won a spectacular victory, just as spectacular as 1967, maybe even more spectacular than 1967. But Henry Kissinger, who was Secretary of State at the time, this self-hating Jew, this self-hating Jewish refugee, this intermarried, self-hating German-Jewish refugee, who was Nixon's Secretary of State, he went to the Prime Minister of Israel at the time, Golda Meir, Shem Reshaim Yerkav, and to Moshe Dayan, who was the Defense Minister, Shem Reshaim Yerkav, may the memory of the wicked rot, also traitors, Golda Meir, Moshe Dayan, complete traitors, Abba Ibn, another traitor. In Hebrew, Abba Evan, another traitor. And he went to this evil Israeli government and he said to them, if you strike first, there won't be a dog catcher in America who will support you. You won't get the support of a dog catcher in America if you strike first, Kissinger told them. He warned them and pressured them not to strike first. And so they gave in to his pressure. They listened to him. They gave in to his pressure. And so Israel absorbed the first blow in the Yom Kippur War, and Israel was nearly destroyed. It was a miracle. Hashem miraculously convinced the dictators of Egypt. Anwar el-Sadat was a dictator of Egypt. Hafez al-Assad, the dictator of Syria. He convinced them to stop because they could have gone all the way into Israel. Israel was completely unprepared for the war because the Israeli government decided not even to call up the reserves, not even to prepare, to really show we were attacked, to make sure everybody knew that the Arabs attacked first. That will really show how right we are and how wrong the Arabs are. That'll show the world. That's what the Israeli government was worried about. And they were willing to sacrifice the lives of thousands of Israeli soldiers. 3,000 Israeli soldiers were murdered in that war. They were willing to sacrifice the lives, almost 3,000. They were willing to sacrifice the lives of Israeli soldiers, of Israeli Jewish soldiers, just to prove to the world how nice Israel is and how the Arabs are the ones who are the aggressors. The Arabs are the ones who attack. The Arab nations, Israel is the good guy. And so they absorbed the first blow. And Israel was nearly destroyed. The only reason the Egyptian army and the Syrian army didn't go all the way and destroy Israel completely is because they captured some land in the Sinai, the Egyptian army, and the Syrians on the Golan Heights. And then they stopped because the leaders of Egypt and Syria were sure that this is a Jewish trick. This can't be. The Jews are going to just trap our soldiers if we go all the way into the middle of Israel. The Jews are going to trap our soldiers and then destroy our armies. This is just a Jewish trick. God convinced them of that. Hashem convinced them of that. The Jews are so clever and such great commanders. They, of course, they're just tricking us. That's what the leaders of Egypt and Syria thought, and they were wrong. The Jews were not prepared, completely unprepared, completely exposed to an absolute Arab invasion, to the destruction of Israel, which could have happened. It was a miracle from Hashem. Hashem protected little Israel. But almost 3,000 Israeli soldiers were murdered in that war. And that's thanks to Henry Kissinger, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yerkav. This filthy pig, Kissinger, Yimach Shmo, then went on to pressure Israel to give up land. He's the one who started Israel giving up land after the 1967 Six-Day War. Israel hadn't given up any land until then. Kissinger started that process. Kissinger's the one who started it. Before then, William Rogers, a Gentile anti-Semite, was Secretary of State, and he came up with the Rogers Plan, and he came up with a plan. He wanted to get Israel to surrender, but he was unsuccessful. It was Kissinger the Jew who was successful in getting Israel to make these suicidal concessions and start giving up land. Kissinger the Jew did it. Kissinger the Jew went to Gentile senators and congressmen who were reluctant to in any way criticize Israel because Israel was still very popular in those days. And you know, everybody knew little Israel and the Arabs want to push the Jews into the sea and destroy Israel. The Arabs openly said so for decades. So little Israel was a popular cause. And the Gentile senators and congressmen didn't want to go against Israel, didn't want to support any policy where there was pressure on Israel. They wanted to stand by Israel and show they were standing by Israel. That was the popular thing to do at that time. And so when Gentile anti-Semites in the State Department like William Rogers tried to get Israel to commit suicide, it was unpopular and there was resistance. But Kissinger the Jew, he was able to change all of that. Because Kissinger the Jew said, would I, a Jew, do something to endanger Israel? Would I, a Jewish refugee from Germany, do something to endanger Israel? This is what he told Gentile senators and congressmen, and he convinced them. When he said that, that convinced them. And so when Kissinger the Jew gave legitimacy to pressuring Israel, gave legitimacy to being against Israel, gave legitimacy by saying, I'm a Jew and I'm against what Israel is doing, and I'm a Jew and I want Israel to give up land and surrender, that was the beginning of the catastrophe for Israel. Look at the terrible disaster it is when Jews like Kissinger reach high positions. I'll give you another quick example. You have the New York Nazi Times. The New York Nazi Times was a newspaper that did everything possible to help Hitler in the 1930s. They wrote favorable articles about Hitler. They got an award for an impartial, unbiased reporting from Nazi Germany. Imagine this, they got an award for being impartial and unbiased in their reporting from Nazi Germany. I mean, other newspapers and other media were saying, look at this madman Hitler and look at what he's doing and he's a bloodthirsty dictator and a threat to the world. New York Nazi Times said, no, he's not even a dictator. He's not a dictator. He's not like Mussolini, because there are other parties still in the Reichstag, in the German parliament. He's not like Mussolini, who only has one party in fascist Italy. The New York Nazi Times said he restored confidence to Germany, brought the confidence back to Germany. And they call him Herr Hitler. Herr Hitler. Herr meaning Mr. Hitler. They never use the foreign honorary title for other leaders around the world, but for Hitler they said Herr Hitler in all the articles, giving him honorary titles and never referring to him as a dictator in the 30s. The New York Nazi Times was owned by the Sulzberger family, by a Jewish, self-hating German Jewish family, Yimach Shmam v'Zechram, pooh! Hashem should burn them for eternity. They should be tortured and suffer for eternity for what they did to the Jewish people. They helped bring about the Holocaust. When Hitler and the Germans, before they started the Holocaust, they probed and wanted to see what would the world reaction be. How's the world going to react if we start murdering all the Jews? Because they didn't want to lose World War II at first. And when they saw that the largest newspaper in the United States, the New York Nazi Times, and a Jewish-owned newspaper, was praising them and backing them and being nice to them. When they saw this, this was one of the things that encouraged Hitler and the Nazis to carry out the Holocaust. And encouraged Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro, the anti-Semitic president at the time, not to lift a finger to help the Jews during the Holocaust and to do everything possible to enable the Germans to murder 6 million Jews. Roosevelt and Churchill, they saw the largest newspaper in the United States, the most prominent media source in America at that time was the New York Nazi Times. The newspaper of record. All the other media got their cues from the New York Nazi Times. And when they saw that not only the most prominent media source in the Western world and the most prominent media source and the most prominent newspaper was saying we shouldn't do anything. Hitler is not so bad, and we, you know, let's not rush to judgment. That's what the New York Nazi Times said. Let's not rush to judgment about Hitler. This vicious newspaper, and then they saw that the newspaper, and it's also owned by Jews. They said, we could do anything we want. Look at this. The Jews themselves are abandoning their own brothers and sisters in Europe. We could do anything we want. We've got carte blanche to murder the Jews. Roosevelt and Churchill saw we have carte blanche to allow Hitler to murder the Jews. And that was one of the leading causes of the Holocaust, that vicious newspaper. And other media sources, because you had a lot of Jewish influence at CBS and other, because the radio was very powerful in those days, and you had a lot of media power, a lot of Jewish power in the media, and The Jews and the media were almost uniformly against their own people, against their own brothers and sisters. Not only did they do nothing to save the 6 million Jews during the Holocaust, they did everything they could to stop anyone who would dare try to save them, to fight against saving them. And Hollywood, the vast majority, Hollywood was controlled by the Jews in the 30s and 40s and all those old good movies that you saw. They made, the Jews are brilliant people. They made incredible, beautiful movies in the 30s, 40s, 50s, fantastic movies. Really incredible, inspirational movies. Can you imagine with their power in Hollywood? And the Jews were the dominant force in Hollywood. The majority, the overwhelming majority of the directors and the people who owned the movie industry at that time were Jewish, were self-hating Jews, all self-hating Jews. You think they did anything to lift a finger to help the Jews during the Holocaust? Are you kidding? They were against Ben Hecht. Ben Hecht was the only one who did try to help. Ben Hecht was the one who did. He was the one who directed Gone with the Wind and other great movies. He was the one Jew who did try to help the Jews during the Holocaust. And the other Jews in Hollywood fought against him. Most of the other Jews in Hollywood fought against him. So Jews in high places outside of Israel overwhelmingly worked to destroy, and in politics, almost all of them work against their own people. They bend over backwards to show, I'm not loyal to Jews. Don't identify me with the Jews. I'm not. They're always trying to prove to the anti-Semites they have nothing to do with Israel. They have nothing to do with the Jewish people. Don't associate them with Israel or the Jews. I'm not a Jew. I'm a human being. I'm an American. I'm not a Jew. That's their attitude. That's their mentality. And they are the worst enemies of their own people. And that includes the so-called Orthodox Jews like Joe Lieberman, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who said the first thing he would do when he was running, he was the Democrat candidate for vice president in 2000, the first thing he would do if he was elected would be to invite Louis Farrakhan to the White House, because he said, I want to understand, I admire him and I want to understand what Louis Farrakhan is all about. I want to have a meeting with him, I want to invite Louis Farrakhan to the White House. Louis Farrakhan, who said that Hitler was a great man and Judaism is a gutter religion and the Jews deserve another Holocaust and the whole white race is a devil race that will be exterminated by Allah. Louis Farrakhan, Joe Lieberman, wanted to invite to the White House if he became vice president. God forbid. And Lieberman also said Arafat, as he on the Larry King show, he said Arafat is my friend and we can have peace and we can get, and Israel should give up all the land. And And by the way, 94 senators signed a letter supporting Israel against pressure that Bill Clinton was placing on Israel. Lieberman was one of the six senators who refused to sign the letter. Lieberman also fought against any attempt to free Jonathan Pollard, the Jewish hero, who was kept in prison completely unjustly for over 30 years. So that's the Jewish politicians. Now, Mike Bloomberg, I'm not even going to go into Bernie Sanders. I think you know already that Bernie Sanders is a Jewish anti-Semite. And I don't think he's going to get elected, but he's a Jewish anti-Semite. And he's an example of the sick, evil, rotten mentality of these vicious Jewish politicians. Bernie Sanders, Schmuck Schumer, the worst, the lowest. And the Jewish Republicans are also horrific. Henry Kissinger was a Jewish Republican. Now, Mike Bloomberg, he's another self-hating Jew. He was born in extreme left-wing Boston, Massachusetts. Then when he was a young man, he moved to extreme left-wing Manhattan. Not only New York City, but Manhattan. You know what Manhattan, you know what the vote was for president in 2016 in Manhattan? Manhattan, the island of Manhattan in New York City. 87% for Hillary Clinton. 87%. She got 87% of the vote in Manhattan. And I think 82 or 83% in New York City as a whole. That's Mike Bloomberg. That's what he represents, that extreme left mentality in New York City. He was the mayor of New York City for 12 years. He's also, by the way, Bloomberg is also intermarried, self-hating, completely assimilated. gives all of his money to evil causes. All of his money to evil causes. Climate change, which prevents us, by the way, from... I mean, if not for all these environmental lunatics, we a long time ago would have put the Arabs out of business, the Arabs and the Muslims out of business in terms of the oil, in terms of the oil industry. Because we could have become energy independent, and the United States could have become energy independent 20, 30 years ago instead. Now the United States is energy independent. But the United States could have been energy independent 20 or 30 years ago if not for all these environmental restrictions and people like Bloomberg pushing this evil agenda of theirs. And look how cold it is, how freezing it is now. And it's not even mid-November, and we have temperatures here in New York City. We've had temperatures the past couple of days in the 20s. That's global warming? Let me tell you something. Those self-hating Jews, they're going to get some global warming when their tuchuses are burning in Jehennem, in Gehennom, in hell, in the next world. That's when they're going to experience global warming, including Mike Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders and Schmuck Schumer and Henry Kissinger and the New York Nazi Times and the Hollywood Jews. That's when they're going to find out what global warming is all about. And then Bloomberg wants to take away everybody's guns. And I could go through all the other left-wing issues, extreme left positions that he takes, because they're saying he's a moderate. He's a moderate. Are you kidding me? He wants to confiscate people's guns? Do you know that he tripled our property taxes here in New York City? I lived in New York City the whole 12 years when Bloomberg was mayor. He was the worst mayor in the city's history. The worst. He tripled New York City property taxes. Bill de Blasio is a communist. He's the current mayor of New York City. He's a communist. He's a terrible mayor, no question about it. But de Blasio couldn't get through the things that he wanted to do. He can't triple people's taxes. He's also raises property taxes here, but he can't triple property taxes. He wouldn't get away with it because he's so unpopular, de Blasio, and so ineffective. Bloomberg, he gets the job done for bad things. He's very effective in getting bad things done. He tripled property taxes in New York City. Tripled property tax. More than doubled New York City's huge bloated budget. He inherited a huge bloated budget, and he more than doubled New York City, more than doubled the New York City budget. He drove hundreds of thousands of middle-class New Yorkers out of the city. The city is now a place for the very wealthy and for the poor, and for the people who are on welfare and food stamps and the poor people. That's what he made New York City. He destroyed New York City as a place where middle-class people could live. There are still some middle-class people here, but much fewer than there were when Bloomberg became mayor. He made the city unlivable for many middle-class people who left the city, who fled the city. Now, that's him on American issues. Do we have any doubt what he would do on Israel? There's no question about what he would do on Israel. He supports the so-called two-state solution. He said maybe Arafat was a terrorist. He wasn't sure whether or not the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat, who murdered thousands of innocent Jewish men, women, and children in cold blood and bragged about it, who hundreds of times said he wants to push the Jews into the sea and finish Hitler's job. This monster Arafat. Bloomberg said, maybe he's a terrorist. He's not sure he's a terrorist. Maybe. And he wants to get Israel to create a so-called Palestinian state, even though there are no Palestinians and there is no Palestine. It's a complete historical lie. But he wants to get Israel to do this suicidal thing. And if he is president, God forbid, he's the type of person who micromanages every little thing in policy. That's the worst nightmare for Israel in the Middle East. Thank God we have a dumb president like Donald Trump. Donald Trump's a moron. I mean, for a president, he's a complete moron. He knows nothing about the Middle East, knows nothing about... He's really, really dumb. Thank God. Thank God we want a dumb president. Because politicians only do bad things. They do harm nowadays. Government has become bad. It's become a malignant force in the world. Not a good force, not a force for good, but a force for bad. And because Trump is so dumb, He couldn't micromanage what happens in the negotiations in the Middle East. He doesn't know anything about it. He wouldn't be able to do that. I'm not saying there isn't a threat from Trump, too. There could be a threat. And if he's reelected to a second term, we could face a threat of Trump trying to impose a so-called peace plan on Israel, God forbid. But so far, he has been more detached from all of that. So he's better for us than the Democrats, because the Democrats, you had them micromanaging the negotiations. Jimmy Carter was involved in every little detail of the negotiations, which is what you need to do if you really want to seal a deal. And therefore, Jimmy Carter was able to get Israel, together with that traitor Menachem Begin, to surrender the entire Sinai to Egypt, which was a catastrophe. And the same thing with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton in the Oslo agreements was deeply involved in every detail of Oslo, which was disastrous, and nearly got Israel. He convinced Israel to commit suicide. He convinced Ehud Barak was the prime minister at the time. He convinced them to give up all the land to surrender. He convinced, by the way, he got Bibi Netanyahu, the other traitor, to give up 13% of Judea and Samaria in the Y agreements, to give up 97% of Hebron in English, Hebron in Hebrew, Ir Avoteinu, the city of our forefathers, the second holiest city in the world, and 97% was handed over to Arafat and the Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists under Clinton and under Netanyahu. So when you have a president like Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton who are involved in all the details and micromanage the negotiations, that's the worst nightmare for Israel, because then they call up if there's a problem here in this part of the negotiation or this thing or that issue or this issue. They right away call up and say, can we solve this? Let's work this out. They get into the details, and that's the worst disaster for Israel. By the way, the reason Israel didn't go back completely to the pre-67 borders, which is what Bill Clinton demanded they do that. He spent 2 years pressuring Israel to do that. Netanyahu, Barak, they were going to do it. But thank God, God gave us Arafat, who was so stupid that he rejected the Clinton proposal. He rejected it. And that saved Israel. It was insane, but if he had accepted it, Israel's very survival would have been, you could have faced another Holocaust, God forbid. It would have been a catastrophe. But we don't want a president like Clinton or Carter or Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg really is detail-oriented. He micromanages everything. He is super involved in every little detail. This is the guy who made us... We had 17 different types of colors that we had to have for our garbage bags. You put out the garbage. One for cans, one for bottles, one for this, one for... You had like a list of 17 different colors that you needed to buy in the store to put out your garbage. Just to put out your garbage. And if you didn't do it, you got fined. He would have the sanitation department go around and give you a $100 fine and refuse to pick up your garbage and give you a $100 fine for not putting your garbage in the right color bag. That was Mike Bloomberg when he was mayor. Okay? And de Blasio has sort of dropped all of that already. But Bloomberg did that with every aspect of New York City life. Can you imagine him micromanaging the details of the Middle East negotiations like that? We'd be in a lot of trouble, God forbid, a lot of trouble. And then he would say, I'm a Jew. I would never hurt Israel. Do the same. He would say to give the same line Kissinger and Schumer and all the other self-hating Jews give. Would I, a Jew, hurt Israel? Ma, what are you talking about? I mean, under Bloomberg, we had the biggest tax increases in New York City history. And that's not easy to be number one when it comes to tax increases in New York City. New York City residents pay the highest taxes in America. In America. And Bloomberg, and that was true even before Bloomberg became mayor, and then he gave us the biggest tax increases in New York City history. That means no mayor of any city in New York ever increased taxes more on its residents than Mike Bloomberg did. He did the most in New York City history and in American history for any mayor. And of course, he was buddies with Al Sharpton, and a friend instituted even more stringent affirmative action. You go down the line. I mean, just a catastrophe, right across the board, a catastrophe. I don't think Bloomberg is going to get the Democrat nomination, because there's a lot of resistance to him because he's a multi-billionaire. By the way, he would cause tremendous anti-Semitism. There'd be a real danger of a Holocaust in the United States if he became president eventually. Because he would cause tremendous anti-Semitism. The super rich Jew, and then he would bring disastrous policies to America. The American people would, and then the American people certainly will blame the Jews. He would be an unbelievable nightmare. I don't think he's going to get the nomination, but I could tell you right now, be ready, JTFers, because if, God forbid, he somehow gets that nomination, JTF will drop everything else and work full-time, day and night, to defeat him, because that would be an all-out emergency for us. The possibility of having this self-hating Jew in the White House would be an all-out emergency for the Jewish people. We would work day and night to defeat him. That would be our all-out priority. And of course, that means, you know, again, you know I don't like Donald Trump, but we have to reelect him because the Democrats are worse. That's the reality. We don't have a choice. And so, we would have a critical role to play. If you have a self-hating Jew like Bloomberg as the Democrat nominee, God forbid, if that nightmare scenario ever comes out, God forbid, but if we ever face that nightmare scenario, then of course JTF will be essential, because JTF could then say, we're Jews, and we're telling you as Jews what a disaster this self-hating Jew would be as president. That would be much more effective than than Gentiles attacking him. So we'll see what happens. Let's hope, God willing, that he fails, because again, the self-hating Jew in politics does much more damage than the worst Gentile anti-Semite. And history proves that. We're still doing our advertising campaign in Israel, thank God, and reaching tens of thousands of Israeli Jews with our message of truth, the only group that I think is telling the real truth to the people of Israel. That's what we're doing, and that's what you're part of when you're part of JTF. Because if we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. We can change history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.